Welcome back to the podcast. It's show 107, and this week we're joined by Dave Wenham, who comes to talk about his various projects, his swing lens cameras, and his love for pinhole photography. Hello, and welcome back to the Lensless Podcast. It's show 107, and no Corey this week. Corey's back looking after his father-in-law, who's had a few health issues. So hope all goes well, Corey, and lots of love to your father-in-law. But I am joined. We do have a guest. You'll be pleased to know. But first of all, thank you to Krista Brand for show 106. I think it's got a lot of good feedback, so we're very pleased to have chatted with Krista. So this week we've got another, I don't know what to say, really. He was county-level basketball player who had an England trial. He collected stamps. He was into family history, fell walking, beer and wine making. I like that. What else? I've written something else down. I can't work out what it is. DIY, cycling, astronomy, home computers. And then eventually, because he's really old, older than me, I think, early in the or to the mid-70s, he got into photography. And I guess that's dominated his life since. But we'll find out, because Dave Welland joins us for show 107. Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Nice to be here.
It is. It's lovely. I've been you're one of the most active Twitter people that's in this little Believe in Film community. I'm very hesitant to refer to film communities because, you know, if you don't do Twitter, you're obviously not part of that. No. And a lot of people don't do Twitter, and a lot of people don't do Facebook. So there's a whole raft of people in the film community, and so many people are doing wonderful things that we never get to hear of. But Dave, you're doing wonderful things. So
thank you.
All those, you describe yourself in one of your blogs, which is fantastic. By the way, we can promote your blog. I love the writing that you do on photography as a photographic butterfly.
Yes, forever flitting.
Forever flitting, and I get that, because that's been my problem too. But I think you're probably more of a butterfly now than I am. So, Dave, why don't you just? I've set the scene. You know, you love doing all sorts of things. Photography is clearly a great passion. So, why don't you do that normal thing that we do at this stage, and tell us about your photographic journey, and then how you got into pinhole photography?
Okay, well, it is a familiar story, really. As you alluded to, I'm one of the older ones. I started photography in the early 1970s. Just into my teens, I think, with Kodak Instamatic. That was 1.26 film, yep. Small, fuzzy square images with very strange colours. And I actually shot two rolls of that for my A-level project and passed, so they couldn't have been that bad. So that's when I started.
Was that A-level in photography?
No, it wasn't. It was environmental science. I wanted to be an environmental scientist.
Did you?
Which is probably the only thing you didn't mention in the introduction, because it never happened.
Okay.
mid-70s, my father bought a Zenith E. He dabbled with photography. That was the first SLR he ever owned, and I think I used it more than he did. This was in the days when you could go to a rock concert, you could wave a camera in the air and take pictures with Triax at 1600 ISO, go home and print them and take them into school the following day. So that was how I paid for my film back in those days. So with paparazzi pictures of rock concerts, and very, very, very fuzzy 5x7 prints.
Mm-hmm. So you had a dark... How old were you then?
I would have been still at school, so probably 16, 17, something like that.
And you had a dark room or access to a dark room?
No. I had a need for very little sleep and a very understanding mother. Once the family had gone to bed at about 11 o'clock every night, I blacked out her kitchen and stayed up until 2 or 3 in the morning making darkroom prints.
And did you ruin the chrome plug sink thing?
I ruined lots of things.
I used to, very similar. So I was in my teens and my father had a Zenith TTL. I think it was just called Zenith TTL. I can't quite. And I had that. And then
that
he had
a posh one.
Was it? Yeah. And he had he gave that to me because he bought a Fed 4, I think it was. And then he gave that to me as well. And because my dad used to print pictures in the coal shed.
Oh, right.
Of the council flat that he lived in. And he was very proud of one or two pictures. And he used to show me one that he took a print that he made in this coal shed of the bow of a ship in Great Yarmouth Harbour, which he got a prize for in the Great Yarmouth Camera Club, I think. So me too. And my first darkroom was in my mum and dad's small council flat in Great Yarmouth.
Yeah.
Either in a cupboard in their bedroom, which is kind of weird, or later on I progressed to the bathroom where I stripped enamel off things.
I was banned from the bathroom for that reason, I think. I did start off in the cupboard under the stairs, a bit like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
But I'm over 6 foot tall and that wasn't very comfortable. So she let in and or gave in and let me have the kitchen of an evening, sort of a night. and I think, I mean, like most of us, the intervening years then, the interest waxed and waned. I had four kids. I had a mortgage. I had a job. I did a lot of traveling for my job. So
what did you do? What job were you doing?
I started working for a building society back in the 70s. By the time I left, they had turned into a bank, been taken over, and were now a financial services institution with, let's just say, completely different ideas about how to treat people than I did. So that's how I found myself without a job at 52. I think after 34 years, I think I was there. I'd seen too many changes, and I wasn't a yes man. So that was the end of my career, but it was the start of the resurgence, really, of my interest in photography.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if we go back to 2003, I just completed 25 years with the bank, and they said, "Oh, 25 years, we've got to give you something." So they gave me a Coolpix 3 series. I had to look this up this morning. Coolpix 3 series camera. Mm. 3.2 megapixels. It was the first digital camera I'd ever known.
Yeah. And it was Fuji, wasn't it? Coolpix, was it Fuji?
Nikon.
Nikon
Coolpix. Yes.
Did it have a lens on that went...
Yeah. You could take an eye out with it, definitely.
It was, and it had a big card in the back, didn't it? Is that the one?
Flash cards. Yeah, I've still got it. Yeah. 64 megabytes.
Yeah, I had one in my drawer until recently. It was a work camera that I bought for work. And because no one understood how it worked, I didn't really understand how it worked either. it was digital, and I never used a digital camera. So I know exactly the kind of thing. It was quite expensive. I seem to remember Nikon Coolpix. Yeah. I don't know what year did you get yours?
2003.
It'd have been about the same time. It would have been about the same time.
It was the best part of £400.
I think.
You know,
I bought it on expenses.
I had one given to me by the company, so I didn't have to fiddle my expenses that year. But that really was the start of me getting back into photography in a serious way. And then I just went through the usual. I mean, I've always been a Canon shooter, and I bought a 400D in 2006. And, you know, and up until 2015, I was full on digital until my 57th birthday. And I had to look this up this morning. For my 57th birthday, my wife gave me a Hasselblad 500cm.
What a lovely wife. Mind you, they've gone down. What year was this? They've gone down in price a bit.
2015. So
okay, well, they'd be creeping up again, wouldn't they?
They were creeping up. It was a few hundred pounds. She wouldn't tell me what. Oh. But she bought it from a local camera shop in Halifax.
Yeah.
And if they'd sold it to her, then I knew they wouldn't have ripped her off. You could rely on them. So, you know, and that was the start of sort of that. That was a camera I'd lusted for since, you know, as long as I could remember.
Mm.
And it was a very disappointing I sold it last year because I never used it. I just didn't like it.
What didn't you like about it?
I don't know, because the weird thing is, I sold it and bought a Bronica.
Yeah, so it's not the square format, then, is it?
It's not the square format, and it's not the boxy-type camera. Yeah. I don't know. I just didn't feel any... I mean, this is a weird thing to say, but I didn't feel any connection with it whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the first time I borrowed a Bronica ETRS and later an SQA, both of which I've now got, and it just felt as if I'd been shooting with that all my life. And so that was, you know, that was a turning point, I suppose. It was the point at which I started to turn away from digital. And it was the point at which I started to move more into medium format film rather than 35 mil.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a progression that continued, though. I mean, I mean, my use of film up until 2019 was probably 10% of everything I took. But then something happened in 2019, and you know, I now shoot pretty much 95% film. So,
what happened in 2019? What was the trigger?
I got my new camera. I got my first pinhole camera.
Oh, right.
So,
what was that?
Yeah, it was a zero image 612B. That's the multi format.
Okay, yeah, that's 6x12 and then 6x6, is it, or?
It goes 6x12, 6x9, 6x7, 6x6, and 6x4.5. Although I shoot it at 6x12 all the time, really, because that's the format I prefer. I had indifferent results, I think, is the fair thing to say in 2019. I put a few rolls through it and looked at the results and thought, what am I doing? but then the pandemic came and I sat down with it and started to think about what I was doing. And
what changed then? What changed from the early experiments where you were perhaps a bit disillusioned to then it all perhaps clicking? What did you discover?
I think I learned, I shielded for 4 months last year.
Right.
And so I had 4 months where I wasn't allowed to leave my house or go further than my gate.
Sounds lovely.
things in retrospect, but at the time I hated it. But my wife said, you've got all these cameras, go and use them, do something, and stop winding everyone up by moaning. That was paraphrase, obviously.
Yeah.
So I started to use it more seriously and to think about what I was doing and to work out why I didn't like the pictures. And, you know, long story short, early last year, I went and bought a 5x4 pinhole camera.
Let me just stop you there because I'm really interested in what you did, what you did to go from I'm not really happy with this. What was it that you weren't happy with to something that you were happy with? What changes you? Because this might help other people
getting into
pinhole.
I mean, I was trying to use a pinhole camera as if it was just a normal 35 mil camera with a 50 mil lens on it. I was composing as if it was, as well as you can compose with a pinhole. I learned pretty quickly that my pictures didn't have any impact. There was no obvious main subject. So what I started to do was to get in close to things, you know, stick the pinhole camera in places where I would never have dreamt of putting a 35 mil camera.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, by getting in close, by making sure there was an obvious main subject, I suddenly started to get a bit more impact in the pictures. You know, to the point where I could look at a scene, use the sight lines which I drew on the camera to know roughly what was going to be in and out, and really use the depth of field.
Yeah, because the zero, I've got the 6x6, that was my first 2000 camera. But that doesn't have any, I don't know, it doesn't have any sight lines on it at all.
No.
I didn't even know such things existed till way later. I started using a piece of square card and held it up
an
inch from my eye, you know, because that's about the 25 mil of something like that anyway, or maybe that's, yeah, it's about that anyway, about an inch or so, to get a feel for it. But after a while, I just sort of, like you, stuck it close to things.
That's it, yeah. And it's thing, I mean, now, when I talk to people now, it's such an obvious thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, getting close.
Having said that, there's been some people we've interviewed and people's work I look at online, where they use a more longer focal length.
Mm.
So, and use it, you know, for portraits, for self portraits. People like Kath Cartman, who does a lot of self portraits. We interviewed her back, you know, a year or so ago. She uses a pinhole camera that she bought in Norwich, and that's probably about 150 mil focal length.
Yeah.
And you get compositions that you're more used to from a normal inverted commas point of view, but you're getting something different, you know. And she uses the motion blur and the time, and so there she's still getting a strong focal point, but because she's got not all cameras, pinhole cameras are super wide, are they? So you can
use the long ones.
Have you got yourself a Harman Titan yet? Because then you can explore everything from 72 millimeters on 5x4 to 150 normal focal length.
I bought a Titan a couple of months ago. So I'm still at the early stages with that. And when I bought it, 72 mil is considerably narrower than I'm used to.
Yep.
But the impact with it, I can see how it could be used for portraits and that sort of thing. But being someone who, I tend to photograph outdoors, I tend to photograph, what's around me rather than people. So I haven't yet plucked up the courage, I think, to stick a pinhole in front of someone and say, sit still.
Oh, you should try handheld pinhole portraits. That's great fun. I did a load at the World Pinhole Photography Day in Norwich 2 or 3 years ago. And we were out in Norwich Marketplace, and I had it was a zero cap image camera, I think it was. And I just got people to stand up against the wall, and I held it in front of them, opened the shutter for about a second and closed it. And they're really interesting pictures, and it's great fun.
I've got 10 grandchildren. I'll start pointing the camera at them.
Absolutely. Stick some HP5 in on a sunny day and just go open, close. You know?
Well, it's school holidays here, so they've just started. And because my kids work, two of my grandsons live with me, so I'll be looking after those.
You've got to earn your keep. If you expect me to feed you and look after you, you've got to be a pinhole subject.
I think the other thing that I turned me sort of onto the pinhole more seriously was the first time I accidentally pointed it at the sun. And the flare you get, it blew me away the first time I did it. Originally, I was a bit annoyed with myself, but when I saw the negative come out of the tank, I thought, what have I done?
It's one of the features of pinhole photography, I think, that, like you, I just love. Because it's this idea, isn't it? This idea, we talk about pinhole cameras capturing chunks of time. You know, you're not just, it's not just 1/500th of a second. You can be recording minutes, can't you, or longer.
Oh, yeah.
And then to suddenly see that actually, you're not only capturing time, you're visibly capturing sunbeams.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. And you know, it had been up there on this wall long enough to capture a bit of movement in the sun as well. So there's this streak. I just looked at it, and when I looked at it as a negative, I thought, what the hell's gone wrong here?
Yeah.
But when I then inverted it and I looked at it properly, I thought, wow. I'm forever pointing it at the sun. And, I just like the unpredictability of it, I guess.
Absolutely. So your first zero image camera, you've sold all your 35 mil cameras. Did you have the LaRouge? Did you have a LaRouge?
I did. I sold it last week.
Right. That was the the slightly panoramic format, isn't it?
That's
two,
it, yeah.
About one, two frames one, wide.
Yeah, 135L.
Yeah, so. I think I bought that because I liked what you were doing with it. And now you've sold it.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, after so many years, I mean, I've still got my Zenith E.
Yeah.
And at the period when I was really heavily into digital photography, and let me just say, I do not like the film versus digital debate. I love both, yeah, for both of them. But when I was heavily into digital photography, I was very lucky in that for those few years, I was in a very well-paid job. And I, if I wanted to buy something, I could. And I didn't have to sell things to do it. So I've got far too many cameras, if I'm really honest.
Yeah.
So I've been given instructions that I've got to downsize my collection. And I have sold two this week, but she did tell me 6 months ago to start selling them. So.
What's gone this week?
Well, I sold the Horizon Compact, which was my first panoramic swing lens camera, and I've got a Nikon 90X. I've just sold F90X from the shelves of. SLRs, which are gathering dust in the spare bedroom.
Yeah.
So I sold the LaRouge a few weeks back. So it's not all buying. I'm selling some, honest gov.
Yeah, I've stopped selling stuff now because on the basis that I can't see myself ever being able to afford to buy them back again.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been there as well because I sold a Pentax 645. A few years back now, I bought a Mamiya RB67 and I sold the Pentax 645 at that point, and I just wish I hadn't. I didn't have to sell it, I just sold it.
Yeah.
And I've regretted that because that was a lovely camera to use. And I never used the RB67. In fact, Andrew Keedle's got it at the moment.
Yeah, so. I saw that. Yeah. I sold my Pentax 67. And kept the RB67 for reasons I won't go into. But actually, I still like using the RB. It's a beast of a camera, of course. But I use it for very specific projects. And the ongoing one at the moment is Men and Their Caravans. I've tweeted a little bit about it.
You have, yes.
But I've not seen any results yet because I've been darkroomless for months. I've not done any developing at all. But Men and Their Caravans is a great joy to me, and it's projects. I'd like to come and talk about projects because I know you have several ongoing, and it's one way for me to get to use cameras that would otherwise sit around, probably the RB, you know. And I'm not going to sell the RB because I've got some great lenses with it, and I'll never be able to afford to get it back again.
No, you know?
So I like square formats, but that's obviously not square. So projects and cameras, do you like to work in projects?
I do. I mean, you mentioned at the start that, you know, I'm a bit of a butterfly. And I mean, I've got worse actually in the last 18 months with being locked up around home. I've been creating projects just to give me something different to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I did a zine last year, which I thoroughly enjoyed doing, so I shall do another one of those. And then last October, I bought a swing lens panoramic camera, the compact I've just sold, funny enough.
And then that's the one I've just bought because I was getting all sorts of, as you know, light leaks with my S3.
Yeah.
You bought the S3 and
I
got
did.
Great results with it and didn't have any problems. I got one which was a bummer and I've given it away because I couldn't honestly sell it to anybody.
No.
And I bought the compacts. I thought, well, what do I do? Do I shell out another? I mean, they're not that expensive, but do I shell out more and get an S3? Or and I couldn't afford a wide lux. And I thought, well, actually, I'll get the compact. You know, okay, I know it's got some limitations, but I don't think they're not really limitations that have affected me. I stick some HP5 in it if it's a slightly dull day, or some Auro 54 if it's a bit of a brighter day. And the negatives are great.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wrote a blog on the subject. The compact, I mean, when I first got it, it didn't work properly. It shredded pretty much every film I put in it. And so I slung it in the cupboard and thought, oh,
Well, that Oro stuff, that on that sort of, is it that like polyester base? That I found that a bit teary, if I'm not careful.
Yeah, so I mean, what I did is I eventually got it out Christmas time last year, took it out of the cupboard, gave it a really good clean. I was amazed the amount of gunk I got out of it. And this big lump of grit fell out whilst I was doing it. And I'm thinking, that's what's shredding the film. And,
it's not helping, is it?
No.
Was it Russian grit, do you think?
I don't know whether it was Russian grit or moon dust. It could have been either, couldn't it? So I stuck a roll of HP5 in because it's a fairly tough old film.
Yeah.
And very, very sort of, you can do almost anything with it. You can't really harm it. And then as each new roll came out of that camera, I just realised that, I had a knack for composing with it.
Mm-hmm.
But B, because you've only got one shutter, well, you've got two shutter speeds, but one in practical use, and you've only got one aperture, there's no point worrying about anything. I mean,
no, it's the ultimate fun point and shoot, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And to be honest, I shoot my S3 that way as well. When I got the S3 with the variable shutter speeds, I'd get my spot meter out and meter a scene, and then I suddenly thought, I'm not enjoying this the way I did with the compact.
You have to question. I suppose it's nice to have the S3. In theory, it's nice to have all those extra shutter speeds, but does it overcomplicate horizon photography?
Only if you let it. I think what I did, I mean, what I do now, is I will take a light reading as I leave the house, assuming I do most of my photography within a mile of my front door. I take a light reading as I leave the house. That's what I set on the horizon, and that's what I use. And I will only take another reading if the light changes dramatically. And if I do a lot of work in alleyways, as you've seen.
That's the, what's that project called? Here Be Rats or something.
That one, yes. Here Be Rats. I do a lot of, my wife despairs if she's with me. Where's he gone now? And
she just looked
for the dirtiest, funniest alleyway, and I'll be down there.
And then why are you taking pictures down the alley? Well, look at the results.
I love those particular pictures, and
got some great alleyways, you see. Well, I haven't got any alleyways around here, so I have to work harder. But you've got those scenes you do on the I don't know whether technically they're cobbled streets. They might be. I think they're only cobbled if they're all irregular sizes, aren't they? But there's some other name for them.
Yeah, sets.
That's
SETS.
Yes.
Yeah, they're sets. Yeah. Well, that's where I live. I live in Evans, and a lot of the back streets around here still have sets. Quite a few roads around here as well have not been taken over yet by the local authorities. Right. There was one road in Halifax I walked down. There was a pothole in the middle of the road. It was at least 18 inches deep. And
small children fall in it and never be seen again.
It was terrible. And I mean, I spoke to one of the residents because I'd found out it was a cul-de-sac as well. And you look a bit strange walking down these streets wielding this big camera thing. And he said, we've had a lot of issues with people parking either side of the hole, and we can't get down to get into our own houses. So, but I'm lucky; I've got a lot to work with there, and it seems to suit the way I see things. And I say, if I go down an alleyway and I think this is a bit darker than where I was just now, I'll just open up a stop or two. And
I haven't got that joy now with just the compact, but I'm working probably on the flexibility of HP5 to see me through, I think, you know.
And to be honest, I mean, I don't know how many rolls I put through that compact, but I never had a dud roll. I never had a negative that I couldn't print. It's just amazing how versatile HP5 is.
It's not quite as idiot-proof as the S3, though, because you have to wind on and cock it separately, don't you?
You do, and that another that, that's a charm because you can double expose.
I know, yeah, but me being an idiot, I did a lot of unintentional ones.
Okay. I mean, that's the only thing I miss with the S3 is I can't deliberately double expose, but that is probably a small price to pay for the little bit of extra flexibility when I wander into sort of dark alleyways behind fast food restaurants.
So here be rats and other environmental architectural shots.
Yeah.
That's an ongoing thing, I think, isn't it, with your Horizon S3?
It is, and it didn't start as a project per se. It's just it evolved from the way I see the world. And, you know, before I got fully back into film a few years back, you'd find me in the back streets of Huddersfield with a little Fuji camera, you know, photographing the same sorts of things, but in the standard, you know, 3x2 format. And, you know, it's been an interest for a long while, but the Horizon has really sort of given it life, I think.
Will you aim to at some time pick up a wide lux, do you think, or is that one step too far?
No, I won't. I mean, I don't work anymore. I've retired. And, you know, I know some pensioners are very, very sort of well off, but not all of us are. And, you know, if I could sell a kidney or a child or something like that, I might be able to afford one. But for some reason, my daughter doesn't want me to sell her kids. So.
Well, then you buy one of those, and you've got to be lucky that it's working properly for a start, I think.
Yes.
And then most people who have them, who do it seriously, probably have two or three just to make sure they've always got one that's working.
Yeah, that's right. And at
£600 would be cheap to find one.
I'd say that would be cheap, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Upwards, you know, and more. Double it, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I've just borrowed a KMZ FT2.
Yeah, I saw that. Simon Forster has one of those. He bought one for a song as part of an auction lot.
Wow. And
I don't know. I meant to ask him, has he used it? You know, or has he sold it?
Oh, well, if he wants to give it away.
I doubt that. Not knowing Simon, he didn't give much away.
Well, I borrowed one from John in Leeds. And, I mean, it's going back this week because if I keep it for much longer, I'm going to want to keep it forever. And, I mean, I was looking, they use a special cassette. You can't just sling a roll of 35 film in it.
Okay.
You've got to re-spool it onto the special cassettes that they use.
Right.
And the cheapest I found was £250, £300, but that was without the cassettes. I mean, it's basically a very heavy, very weird-looking paperweight for £300. So
it's got lots of lovely knobs on, though, hasn't it, and dials.
It's fantastic. I mean, when I first looked at it, I thought, I'm never going to understand that. But actually, it's very simple. And within a few seconds, you can see what's going on. Because, you know, all the little levers on the left-hand side, those are for setting shutter speeds. And there's so many of them because they act as a brake. And as the turret swings back, those levers put brakes on and off to slow it down, to change the shutter speed. So, that's a camera I would like to use for a bit more.
Because I couldn't work out, when I first got the S3, I thought there was something wrong with it, because even though I changed the shutter speed, the turret revolved around at the same point. And I even went so far as to email the Russian lady who I bought it from, or the Russian company. And to be fair to them, you get a response. I don't know if which one you use, but I'd email them a couple of times, and they sent me an English manual through, and the lady communicated in English to me. And then she, I couldn't get my thick head around the idea that it's the slot at the back of the camera is widening, or what, it's either widening, isn't it, for a slower shutter speed, or coming together for a faster one.
That's right.
I just couldn't get my head around it.
Yeah, it goes at the same speed, unless you're on the slower settings.
But then that's constant as well. It's still a constant speed.
It's still
a
constant,
speed, isn't it?
It's glacial, but it's constant, as you say, throughout.
Yeah,
it's the size of the apertures at the back is opening and closing, because you're not exposing all of the film in one go.
No.
You're exposing it in a sweep across. And,
well, that's what, what's his name, the film actor does to get his weird double exposures, isn't it?
Yes.
Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, it runs from one court end to the other.
Have you managed to do one of those? I've tried and was
failed. No, I tried to get my grandson to do it with me, but he just didn't understand the concept. and I couldn't find a grown up who was stupid enough to try it. So
I'll have to come and see you. See you one day.
Well, there's a big field out near where I live. We can go and run around like that, like a pair of 12-year-olds.
So what other projects are you working on then, apart from buildings and alleys?
Well, the newest one is glass plates.
Yep. Seen some work you've done. Tell us about your glass plate journey, because I've been watching that with interest. You've got some great results with that as well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, I've just before we came on air, I put a picture up on Twitter that I took this morning in my garden with a glass plate. It was more a case of, I want to do something different. And my wife said, you've got so many cameras upstairs, go and do something different. Use one you've not used for a while. But I've been using all of them just recently. So, and then I read about dry plates being available. I think it was Analog Wonderland's website.
Mm-hmm.
That I saw them on there and I thought, oh, I wonder. And so I started digging into it, really, just to see what it was all about, and realized it was doable. And I think I said to someone recently, it's not just the technicalities of it. It's trying to find a subject that will work with this older technology. Because, to be honest, anyone these days can stick a roll of film in a camera and take a picture and it'll work. But when you're using these older processes, is it not making an old-fashioned picture, but making a picture that is sort of sensitive to the process? And, you know, it's... I found it sort of, I've looked at the scenes and I thought, I'm going to use a glass plate. And then I stopped myself and said, why? What are you going to get that is different to a 5x4 sheet of film? And
what are you looking for then? What are you looking for? Which of his plates are you using? Because you've got the two different speeds, haven't you?
I'm using both. The 2ASA, if I want to sort of have a cup of tea whilst it's doing its work.
Mm-hmm.
The 25 speed plates. I think I had a 15-second exposure today, and I had a 1-second exposure last week out on the canal. So, you know, they work pretty much like, you know, a slow film would do in 10 minutes.
Are you paying attention to the theoretical amount of UV light around?
Well, there's an interest. I found an interesting little graph which shows that in the UK, don't bother to do use a dry plate before March or after September because there just isn't enough UV about.
This isn't the graph that comes on Jason Lane's website.
Yes, it is that one. Yeah, right. But the graph is for 2ASA plates, but
yeah.
I just assume that the shape of the curve will be the same for 25s as well. You know, and realistically, even between March and September, you need to be going out between 10 and 2 sort of thing with it. So
yeah.
To a degree, yes. I mean, I took one at 9 o'clock this morning, which came out.
And are you using the nominal 2 ASA or are you?
Yeah, well, I'm using the nominal ASAs, so 2 or 25.
We're showing our age here, ISO.
Yes, ISO. I'm using the nominal speeds. To give me a base exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Then, with the 25 speed plates, if the exposure is over 4 seconds, you double it. So reciprocity. So mm-hmm. I've been doing that quite religiously, which is unlike me. But then I've taken to adding on some for luck.
Well, I was looking at some my pinhole experiments, which were done on a 4-5 camera last August in our garden in fairly bright sun, and I did one at 2x, you know, for reciprocity, and I got quite thin shadows, and I did one at 4x and I got quite nice shadows. So I think give it some welly, really, was my experience, but I think you've done a bit more than me now playing around with it.
Well, I've used the plates with pinhole and with, you know, a standard 5x4 camera with a lens. You know, in fact, the first lot of experiments I did, I was setting it up and exposing a sheet of film, And then before I changed my composition, I just put a glass plate in and did one of those.
That was one you shared earlier on, wasn't it? With a wall and a window, maybe a glass window. Was it some?
Yeah, that's actually a mirror in our garden.
A mirror, yeah. And that's lovely. Yeah. The glass plate one is just so sharp, isn't it?
It is, and it's got an atmosphere as well.
And the colours are rendered differently, of course, from the old.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And I was reading, in fact, reading this morning, the 25 ISO plates, if you stick a yellow filter in front of them, they become orthochromatic almost, but at the loss of three stops of light. So your 25 plate becomes, what, a three or something like that. So, but...
Where did you read that then? Where was that article?
That was probably on Jay Lane's website.
Okay.
Probably. Trouble is that I read so much and I don't ever make a note of what I've read.
No, I know. Yeah, I try and bookmark stuff, interesting things on the phone, you know. But
That's technology. That's beyond me, I think.
Yeah. So this picture you've shared on Twitter, I just found it a little while ago, which is a garden wall with some sort of rendering on and some... bricks and some I don't know what color they were, but they've come out very dark, the foliage.
They're dark green. They are it's a little plant. I mean, that plant from top to tail is no more than about 8 inches. So I was literally 2 inches away from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back to the pinhole, sticking it in close.
And those wonderful lines in the sky. Well, I don't know what they are, but that kind of makes the picture to me.
They're telephone wires.
There's a lot of them, isn't there?
Yeah, the bottom of my garden, or my backyard, because we don't really have a garden here, there's a telegraph pole literally by my gate, and it serves half of our street and half of the street opposite, because that's the back of the house. I mean, I've taken so many pictures of that with blue skies and clouds and all sorts, but... I now embrace them. They're part of they're part of what pictures are around my house, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But that I got in very close. It goes back to what you said earlier about getting close and filling a frame. The lined up the sight lines so that as far as I could be aware, the plant was on the left hand side, and everything would recede. And left it at that, as it were. That was 15 seconds indoors, straight upstairs into the dark room. And 20 minutes later, it's drying in the bath.
Yeah, they are great, aren't they? And was that your zero image 4.5, 44x5?
Yeah, at 50 mil. Because when I bought my zero image 5x4, 4x5, I was tight and I bought the one. Frame,
the basic one that comes.
The basic one, yeah.
So it's just super wide, isn't it? It's
25 mil, they say, and it's just got one pinhole in it. And then I think there was a silver print or somewhere. We're selling off some frames just to clear them. I think and I bought two of them for about 20 quid, and so I've got up to 75 mil now, but still just use the one pinhole because I don't have any more. And all I do is I pretend that it's got the pinhole in it should have when I'm working out the exposures, and then do my usual add a bit on for luck.
Mm-hmm.
If it comes out at 2 minutes 26 seconds, it'll have 2.5 minutes, and it seems to work. It seems to work. that's one that's ongoing. My blog obviously is an ongoing interest from the...
you enjoy the writing. You have lots of thoughts. And so I'd commend... just to share Dave's place, isn't it? Is that
The website is www.wenham.net. If anyone can spell my surname, good luck. It's W-H-E-N-H-A-N for mother. I've had so many variations on that over the years. Mm-hmm. It's not true. I like to write things down. A, it helps me with my thought processes. B, it helps me understand where I've gone wrong on something sometimes.
Yeah.
And people do seem to sort of, both my readers have said they enjoy reading it. So, that's, that's gratifying as well. And the big project at the moment is Dave's Pinhole Camera World Tour.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that until I started looking at your blog.
Yeah,
I mean, I've read bits and pieces of your blog, and because I do actually have a WordPress blog that I don't update as much as you do. And
no, I mean,
I need to subscribe to you.
Well, my mum once said to me, I mean, long gone now, but she said to me, if you haven't got anything to say that's worth saying, don't say it. And you'll find with my blog, I won't post for three or 4 weeks, and all of a sudden you'll get five in as many days.
It's a discipline, though, isn't it, to do it?
It is, and I've chosen the approach of when I've got something to say, I'll sit down, write it, and do it. And if I haven't, then I've got plenty of other things to do, you know. And but I've got to give a plug for the world tour, because that's a collaboration. I think there's 15 or 16 in the group now. A few months back, I was chatting with John Martin on Twitter. It's the only social media I actually use regularly.
Yeah.
And we were talking pinhole and 5x4, and I said, well, I've got a spare camera. I've got a pinhole camera I bought in a charity shop, just sitting around. I'll send it. You can borrow it. And so that's what I did. And long story short, he suggested to someone else they might want to borrow it after him. And now there's 15 or 16 people all signed up to get a 3 week stint with it. And we're hoping that we're going to get a zine out of it early next year. So, and what we've done, we've deliberately approached people with some experience, because that brings people into the group to help others. And also those with absolutely zero experience. So, you know, either with 5x4 or with pinhole.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so there are only a couple of places left, and you need to be a friend of mine on Twitter to snag one of those places. This, John has also donated 3 film holders to accompany the camera on its tour. So if anyone hasn't got any, you know, they needn't be excluded.
Well, I've just about sent you an email to try and grab one of those places.
It's yours. There we
are. I haven't done it yet, so just because I can't multitask, talk to you, look at your pictures, and tweet at the same time. And I was also trying to log into my WordPress site so I could follow you, but I can't remember what the password is. So my head's about to explode with all these different things. So I am a member of another, and Monica Smith, who's a friend of the show, and she's a lovely pinhole lady in America. She sends a Todd Schlemmer, makes his wonderful, free to download if you've got a 3D printer, or you can contact him and buy one. They're called Terrapin 6x6 cameras with circular shutter, which is probably the most instinctive pinhole shutter I've ever had on any camera. So you put your finger in it and twiddle the wheel around, and it exposes the... and then you push it back and it covers it up.
Oh, right.
So there's one of these Terrapin cameras going around the world. And I don't know where it is now. Moni, if you're listening, where is it? Because it's what you do is it turns up with a roll of film in it, and you roll it back and you do shoot over top of whatever's on there.
Oh,
so, right. And then she shares the resultant images into a blog. So two people end up with a little double exposure project.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And it's very much, it's a similar thing to what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, this just came about as a, I think John was drunk when he was chatting to James about it, but, you know, I was happy to go along with it. And, you know, it's, it is sparking quite a bit of interest in pinhole, so that can't be bad, can it?
It can't, no. Yeah, so I saw that with interest as I was looking at your blog for the sort of small bit of research I do. But I see on your blog, Dave's Place, a week of semi-standing. So I've been watching you do that. The old blind school.
Oh, the old blind school, that's a few years back.
Chirias school, I can't even pronounce that, but that's like black and white shadowy stuff, isn't it?
It's contrast word. With black and white, yeah.
Yes, I can't pronounce the word, but anyway.
Chiaroscuro.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of Bill Brandt's work.
Yeah.
And some of his later reprinting.
Well, he shot in places like where you live, doesn't he? With all cobbled streets and very distorted, almost like pinholes, super wide sort of fisheye lenses and things. And he did his nude studies didn't it? So there's the next thing for you. Get some nude studies, nude pinhole studies. Yeah, get yourself banned on Facebook or Flickr.
Banned on anything. Banned from my house. He's got a very famous picture called The Snicket, which was he took in 1937 in Halifax.
Yeah.
And my wife used to work in Halifax, and I was sitting one day in the car in the place I always sat, waiting for her to finish work to take it home. And I was looking in my rearview mirror, and I thought, that's the Snicket. That's Brandt's Snicket. And I got out of the car and took a picture with my phone, got back in the car. When I got home, I got the picture out because I've got quite a lot of books. And I'd been parking in front of that Snicket for 2 or 3 years without actually knowing it was the Snicket. So I've since photographed that to death. And I've also been wandering along the line of the old railway, finding other places where he obviously stood and took his pictures. So, but that's where the chiaroscuro came from. Because,
well, I know exactly the picture. Now I've Googled it, I know exactly which one it is. So that's where the chiaroscuro comes from.
Yeah, because he reprinted a lot of his landscapes later in life, and they were much darker, much stronger use of shadow and light. And I really like the way of doing that. So,
well, when you Google the Snicket, Bill Brandt, and click on images, there are all sorts of varieties of it. I don't know whether they're all his or whether the other people have. There are clearly some modern interpretations, because that big building with all the windows seems to be still there.
Dinclough Mill, yeah, that's still there. It's the home to an insurance company and a holiday company.
Yeah, I'm looking at a fairly new one. It's not yours, I don't think.
I've had quite a few people over the years message me and say, the picture you took of that Snicket, where is it? One guy got me to find it on Google Maps for him and send him.
It's really unchanged, isn't it? I think it's unchanged. It looks like it's
virtually unchanged. There's a big tree there now, which wasn't there before. Mm-hmm. And at the top of it, going over to the right, is a little railway bridge, cast iron railway bridge. That's still there, although the railway's long gone. But no, apart from that tree, if you stand at the bottom and look up, you are looking at pretty much the same view that he did, except it's a bit cleaner now. I've always worked in projects in terms of, having a theme for what I'm doing. And, that's what keeps me sort of pressing the shutter, I suppose.
Some half-frame stuff. I know you don't use much 35mm, but you did some interesting half-frame stuff, which you've been sharing. Yeah.
Olympus Pen EE3.
Yeah, I have one of those too. It's great, isn't it?
It is fabulous.
The EE as well, like the original, the first one, where the back slides down, and it looks, I pretend it's a Leica, but it isn't.
My claim to fame is I can get 78 frames out of one of those.
Yeah, but you don't... I only do it like you do. I shoot him, scenes in a row. That's where it comes into its own, doesn't it?
Well, that's right. I mean, I did a series recently where I was sort of five pictures to form a panorama.
Yeah.
And I actually posted some of those to Twitter, and a couple of people say, wow, I've got to do this now. And they've gone off and bought cameras and done the same thing. And,
I tend to do it with three mostly, but that was probably just, I don't know why it's limit to three. Maybe I need to do more. But it is a great way of using the half frame camera.
Well, A, it doesn't take you forever to get through the roll of film, and B, if you're like me, the panoramic image is how I see the world, really. And it fits into that quite nicely. So,
yeah, and you bought yourself a Holger WPC, I noticed as well.
I blame Will Gudgeon for that.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure he likes his, from what I can work out. We'll see.
I think he's had better luck with his second roll.
I'm staring at mine now. I did have two. I gave one to Neil Piper. And I'm staring. Have you shaved your hole on yours?
Didn't need to, as far as I can see.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. What a thing to ask someone, don't I?
Oh, I ask everybody who's got a Holger WPC.
Yeah.
You're sticking with the 6x12 mask, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, I will probably lose the other mask at some point because, you know, if I want to do anything else, I've got the I've got my zero image, which gives me all the options, really. So, but no, I've put a couple of rolls through that, and I didn't think I would be as sort of intrigued by it as I am. But definitely blame Will on that one.
Yeah, I haven't used mine much at all, but I'm just staring at it now. For some reason, it's sitting on top of my scanner. Yeah, so I will. I lusted after one for ages, but a couple of years ago, the price went right through the roof. And then I think there was a number of new old stock suddenly turned up.
Yes. Yeah.
And I bought one for 50 quid, but I think you said they're going up again now.
Well, yeah, I mean, I bought mine for 50 quid, all but a penny.
Yeah.
And that important penny. But I was looking a couple of days ago because I think I'd watched Will's video as well. And 60, 70, 80 quid. People are blaming Brexit, but I think they're just being greedy. You know, something becomes a little bit more sort of desirable, so they all jump on the bandwagon and, 80 quid I thought was just ridiculous.
Well, they were going for a lot more than that.
Were they?
Yeah, a couple of years ago. Yeah, £100 upwards, which was just nuts, you know.
Well, we're heading that way again, I think, so... that's my latest acquisition, and, whether it'll get a lot of use, we'll have to see.
And what facilities do you have at home? Do you have now darkroom space at all?
I have a space that I can use as darkroom. I'm sitting in it. It's a spare bedroom.
There we go.
It's got my computer in it in one corner. Mm-hmm. It's got two enlargers in the other corner. It's got books along one side. And a huge piece of wood, Contiplas, I don't know what it is. Big, huge slab of wood, which I can put in my window to block it out.
Excellent.
And so I can... I can actually use a darkroom for trade development or for printing.
Mm-hmm.
And but I print in the winter. I don't print in the summer. It's like a sauna in here during the summer.
I much prefer to go, if it's not too hot in my garage, which it normally isn't, I much prefer to print in the summer.
Oh, right.
Because autumn, winter and spring are the times when I prefer to go out into the landscape because I just hate photographing in bright sunshine, mostly.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, for me, I will never start printing before 6 in the evening anyway, so...
Right.
You know, I can still go out and spend my favourite place is the local canal, and I'm amazed I've not fallen in it yet, but, I can spend a whole day down there. And walking the same thing I've walked for, or I've lived here what 19, 20 years now, and I can still find pictures down there.
Yeah, it's a lovely thing to be in a place where you can just photograph in your backyard and be constantly inspired.
Yeah, and it's a small backyard. I mean, it's.
I don't mean literally your backyard, but you know what I mean, don't you? I mean, I mean, you know. Your immediate area.
Environment. And just as well, so I've been doing a 365 project since 2017.
Goodness.
I think I'm on 1,365 consecutive daily images now on Flickr if you want something else to look for. And quite often I have to use my own backyard for those. Certainly during lockdown, they're all taken in my backyard. I mean, it's an urban environment, so it's not rural, but within 10 minutes, I can be down on the canal. And if you can't find something to photograph on our canal, then you don't deserve to own a camera, to be honest.
Excellent stuff. So I think we're Corey likes to keep. I know Corey's not here. We can do what we want, really, but he likes to keep these things to about an hour. So we'll probably wrap it up there. David's been brilliant talking to you.
Thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
We're going to get Will on. We've got Will lined up to come on.
Oh, good.
And we've also got Martin Is it Martin Henson on YouTube? Do you know Martin? He photographs up north somewhere near you.
He's fairly close to me. Yeah, Martin Henson.
I've got it. He might be next. I don't know. I can't remember who I've reached out to now. But it might be him. And then we're going to try and get Will on before too long, before good. Someone else grabs him.
Good. But well,
talk about his mad photography.
He's bonkers, isn't he? Mm-hmm. And I know he might be listening, but he's still bonkers.
Yeah. So if you're listening, we'll set something up soon. If Corey's not around again in 2 weeks' time, I'll press on.
Good.
With somebody. So just remind everybody where the best places are that they can follow you.
Well, I'm on Twitter.
You are indeed.
Yeah, at @Elland_in. Elland is where I live. And my blog is at wenham.net.
Yeah.
So you just have to be careful with the spelling of that, because but it's WHENHAM. There we go.
Excellent. Well, look, thank you so much. And we look forward to reading many more things in your blog and looking at your wonderful work.
Pleasure. Cheers, Andrew.
Dave, thank you very much indeed.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye.